other depart company department, group that I didn't quickly think of that were to some degree outgrowth of fibers. For example, the film department, which had cellophane in the early days and later all kinds of films, was an outgrowth actually of fibers. When I started working, it was part of the same department, but later spun off. And of course, there's the pigment department that had auto paints as well as retail paints.
Tell me more about when the film department was spun off and why it was spun off and what its function and success was.
I'm guessing roughly, but I would say approximately in the late 40s or about 1950, and it was done because it was becoming very obvious that both fibers and film were going to be much bigger businesses than we had originally thought of. And also by that time, fibers had with Carruthers, the invention of the nylon and so on, and we could envision other fibers from the same work that was being done on polymer. And at the same time, we could see films being greatly expanded, and research had lots of ideas there.
What does films mean in the DuPont world?
Well, it started with cellophane, but there were later varieties whose trademarks I can't remember now of films made from polyester, polyethylene, and other basic materials.
And these would be sold to other manufacturers?
It's a different kind of manufacturers, package manufacturers, for example.
Mm-hmm. And who headed up the film territory and made it work?
They were the people that were the heads of the film part of Fibers. When they spun it off, took over as top managers of that end of the business. I cannot quickly remember who the first guy was or anything.
How did, were there rivalries between these departments? How did that reality work?
There were, well, let me name a couple other departments I forgot, like electrochemicals, biochemicals, agricultural chemicals, dyes and finishes. And I may have mentioned these, I may not have, when you asked me at one point what were the other big parts of DuPont. But you asked, did these departments compete with each other? I would say, in a sense, definitely yes, because there are only so many dollars that the DuPont company could come up with to invest in different products. I think many of these departments got very upset with fibers because we seemed to be able to achieve success sometimes when they couldn't. And it made them a little jealous of us. We made more money percentage-wise than they did. And it was there was definitely some feelings between them. But within Fibers, we were overall a very happy family.
You mentioned, did you say Pigments was spun out of Fibers, or
film was the only one spun out of Fibers, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And over time, that was also a great success as a department, wasn't it?
Yes. One thing that I think I mentioned when we first discussed this weeks ago was, of course, one department that was very closely associated was what it was originally an outgrowth of explosives, but became the petrochemicals department, because they supplied almost all of our raw materials. And you could say, well, why on earth weren't they part of your department? Well, part of it's the history of the outgrowth of explosives, plus the fact they made ingredients for other departments.
Was Was the issue of how pricing was handled between departments a big matter of concern?
None whatsoever. They weren't competing with each other, broadly speaking. And each department was run as its little separate company.
But didn't what you had to pay for your petrochemicals vastly influence the profitability or otherwise of fibers?
They more or less followed what the market was. They couldn't charge us much higher prices than we could buy the same ingredients elsewhere. You could buy petrochemicals from others, and there were certain products we did get on the outside.
So the rivalry between departments was expressed how?
In trying to get big dollars, like $50 or $100 million, for a new plant. And you only have so many 50s and 100 millions around, and it was the department that had the best projects and estimated project returns that got the money. And plus, it had a lot to do, as I mentioned earlier, with the kind of leaders you had. And we, I think I mentioned Andy Buchanan. Well, he was particularly, had tremendous courage and was very positive about the way he felt. And he really stuck his neck out in the old days and really was more aggressive in going after the money that was required for expansion. I think he was a stronger leader, frankly, of course, I'm president, but than any other department had.
Mm. Where else should we head, Millard?
What's that?
What other topics should we...
Oh, I've got a whole list here.
Keep going.
In fact, was a separate thought I had when I thought back to our first session and when we got on competition within the company. But now let me move on to the whole agenda here.
Okay.
And the next point is I just want to compare the 40s and the 50s selling, which was relatively simple compared to the increasingly sophisticated marketing, merchandising in the 60s and 70s. The products were also simpler in those decades because the manufacturing processes for rayon filament, staple, tire yarn, acetate were much less complicated than nylon, which was the only purely synthetic and large production we had in this period. And our competition was quite different in those early decades. The strongest competitor we had in the 40s and 50s was the American Viscose Company. That disappeared as rayon did in the 60s. In the next two decades, we had very strong companies like Chemstrand, American Anka, Celanese, Turks, ICI, Bayer, American Cotton Council, and so forth. Now, that's just compare how the thing became so much, the business became so much more sophisticated in the decades after the 50s.
What's the difference between selling something and marketing it?
Well, selling something, you just sold it to your customer, and that was pretty much it. And then in the 60s and 70s, and I'm going to get into some sophisticated examples, and we can come back to that question further if I haven't explained it enough by the time I get through. But I think you'll see from some of the things I'm going to talk about next, for example, the wash-wear concept, which gained momentum in the 50s, and it was then that the blend-level battles began. They started with some unscrupulous customers manufacturing 5 and 10% Dacron cotton blends to take advantage of the Dacron name to converters and on to the apparel manufacturers and retailers. And legally, DuPont could not dictate to our customers how they used our products, so we had to persuade the better fabric manufacturers to make in making lighter blends to use at least around 65% Dacron. In heavier fabrics, it generally wasn't necessary to have much higher percentages than 50% to live up to customers' expectations. And at that time, at least, and probably still isn't, any scientific way of telling exactly which blend level is right, because it depends on so many other factors. For example, the number of ends and picks in woven fabrics, how the fabrics are dyed and finished, and so on. And therefore, in general, one has to look at the blend level averages. We in DuPont all felt that there was a necessity for example, it is for 65% Dacron, particularly in lighter weight fabrics like broadcloth, batiste, and so on. Some of our major customers, like Plotman, agreed strongly, but other ones, the loyal ones, didn't. This created terrible fights between DuPont and its best customers. The quality issue in wovens even spread to the number of ends and picks in the woven fabric. And for example, it was a bitter one-year battle over 56 pick poplin. Many customers thought 56 picks was enough, and some others thought 60 was necessary. But these were all quality issues, but meant a great deal as you went downstream through these levels to the retail customer. I mean, how good the product would perform. And starting in the mid-70s, I start doing my own laundry to make my own judgments on these various issues. And I'm still doing it today to my wife's delight. But that's just one example of these blend levels. But my thoughts on quality have concentrated on these direct customers, but there were also problems through four additional operations downstream to the consumer. These include yarn preparation, how much texturing or twist you put in the yarn before it's woven, lesser amounts or either can ruin fabric. Weaving, I've discussed and talked about blend levels there, but then there's dyeing and finishing. There are less costly processes to cut corners. And when this happens, the final product suffers. And then garment or home furnishing manufacturers, there's a real need in sewing to have the correct fringe thread and the right kind of thread for the best finished product. In retailing, the garment, curtain, drapery, carpet, pillow or whatever, it must be sold for what it is without exaggeration. The knits, which are a large part of our business, were also involved in it, and a similar quality issue. Unfortunately, all of the Pont's fibers are wonderful if everything, all processing is done right, but if it isn't, wool, cotton, or silk are much more forgiving, and this gives them an edge if somebody's going to cut corners and cost. And DuPont provided incentives downstream to try and keep all participants doing the right thing. Usually these incentives were in the form of advertising and promotion, and sometimes at retailing for specific promotions, providing training experts to help the clerk. Now, that's just a feel for that, and I just got one other point. Do you have any questions on all that?
No, that's very clear. Please go on.
Well, the list is a little different, but I think it's a fascinating one that, is like a huge passion for anybody in the industry over the years, and that is why over the last 50 years, this question has come up repeatedly. Why is it necessary, particularly in the apparel business, to have so many functional steps independent, like I went through, I think, five there? Why can't they be combined or forward integrated which would seem to be less costly and simpler. Well, many companies have tried to forward integrate to varying degrees, and always failed, and unless it might be combining two operations like weaving and knitting with dyeing and finishing. One famous example, and I was got quite interested in it because the guy that was doing it lived across the street from me, but in Providence, Rhode Island, was a major attempt in 1950 by Textron, company's CEO and founder, Royal Little, that ended quickly in huge losses. He not only finished fabric and garments and made garments, but built a Textron store on Fifth Avenue. And all the garments and home furnishings in there were manufactured all the way along the line through all the steps by Textron. And it was a tremendous failure. And I talked to Roy Little. In fact, I flew down to New York from Providence the day that they were going to shut it down. And he told me what he was going to do. And I said, well, what really went the most wrong? Because it makes so much sense on the surface. He said, it's the speed of the fashion industry, which controls the success of the business. And he said, we couldn't keep sufficiently abreast of the color and fashion changes quickly enough for their manufacturing and also for to change the retail promotions and so on. But it's a lure that's still out there today at times. DuPont even tried it since I've retired, and I was very disturbed when I heard about it, to create some garment manufacturing down in Mexico. And I think that failed. But I wasn't involved, and I don't know the whole story and so on. But it's always fascinated me that you couldn't get by with forward integrating. It would just seem to be the most obvious question in the world. Why the hell are you making this business so complex? But those are the main sort of additional points that I wanted to make.
That's very good and very helpful, Millard, and clarifies things considerably. I'm not sure what sort of list you have in front of you, so you need to...
Now, I'm finished now. Any list or memorandum here of points I wanted to cover...
Okay, well, what I suggest is that we work our way through to the complete transcript, and then no doubt we'll find other items that it's...
You'll have some questions after you put it together, perhaps, that I haven't thought of, and I'd be happy to talk about them or answer any questions you got.
Exactly. So we'll do that as the next step, and then we'll be... back to you.
All right.
And just for the record, I did receive the letter that you mailed to me. Thank you.
Oh, okay, good.
So we're all squared away for now, and I will be back to you in due course.
All right, Arnold. Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Millard. Bye-bye.